Doghouse is about to kick off. Don't go anywhere. Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Doghouse. Gonna have a bunch of news today, and we're gonna also talk about the World Superbike races in Misano.
In Misano. And then I'm gonna talk a little bit about the flat track races that didn't actually happen in Hagerstown, but I went anyway.
It's always a good thing to have an update on a race that didn't happen.
Yeah, well, that's important. A lot of good things happen. I mean, even though the race didn't happen, other good things happened.
I thought a few weeks ago you said real men race in the rain.
Yes. Unfortunately, you can't race flat tracks on dirt when there's 40 feet of water on the track. Nobody brought their jet skis.
So we'll have that when we do our racing segment. We also are going to have a British Superbike report, which is apparently...
From this guy, Olaf, who I've never seen before.
Which apparently is almost as rare as Diet Birch beer.
It could be.
You know? And we'll see. So we're going to have that in the second part of the show. And Phil, before we get going too much, do you want to talk about your experience that you had? Do you want to save for the racing? Because we do have a lot with the British Superbike.
You know, yeah. Why don't I talk about it a little bit now? Saturday, the AMA Pro Flat Track Series Grand National Championships headed to Hagerstown, Maryland, and I really wasn't sure if I was going to be going or not. But last minute, I decided, yeah, I would be going.
And I told you if you go, give me a call, and you didn't.
Yeah, well, I don't like you.
So in other words, and I went to see Mad Max is what I did instead of going to the race.
Well, see, you got to see something. I didn't get to see nothing, so I actually won because I've seen Mad Max and it was horrible. That's an endorsement from me. It stunk. So I went up to I went up to Hagerstown, had a good ride up there, got there for just before practice. Right, walked over there, did the niceties and stuff in the media center and stuff, and then went.
Did you flush afterwards?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's not what you meant by the niceties? Okay.
I thought we weren't doing that no more. What happened to clearing things up, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Clean things up, stuff like that, you know, and then Ken takes it right to the toilet. That's where Ken's mind is.
Yeah, that's where Ken's mind is.
Ken, bad Ken.
Bad Ken.
Bad Ken. So we went in there and walked around. I went with a couple buddies. And I did get a Shayna Texter.
Autograph?
Interview.
Well, good.
I don't get autographs. So I got Shayna Texter.
Wait a minute. We give autographs.
I did sign her letter. I was like, yeah. I was like, now you're famous.
What she called the police.
No. Everybody loves when I give autographs, Warren. I got the interview, and we started walking down the pit road, and it was fan autograph session time. So, of course, you got to wait for that. You can't do interviews during that because all the riders are busy. But we'd set one up with Brad the Bullet, Jared Mees, and a couple other people. I had a buddy there. He was going to work the video camera for me. And lo and behold, just a few minutes into autograph sessions, I started seeing these thundering and lightnings. And we checked the thing, and the storms were a-coming. So I said, let's meander over to the truck, ride this one out in the truck. We got over into the truck, and we weren't in the truck more than like 5 minutes, and the heavens opened up, you know what I mean? It was flooded in this, and we waited around, and then, because the guy from the AMA said that they were going to race it because they did not have a second date. They weren't going to do it on Sunday, but they had to cancel. They lost the track. It was... You know, it would have took them hours to get it back had it stopped raining right away, and it rained.
Yeah, flat track doesn't work on a saturated track.
That's Texas X Games.
Yeah, that's Texas X Games.
So that was kind of sucky because I was looking forward to interviewing Brad and Brad the Bullet and Jared and stuff. But you know, there's always next time. Mm-hmm. Met a couple cool people while we were kind of like hanging out. There's a GNC team, a GNC 2 team. That's fully sponsored by a company out of Baltimore, so we're going to get those guys on. The people from the AMA, unlike when the AMA ran pro road racing, were like, hey, sorry it rained. Who can we give you for interviews and stuff? So expect some flat trackers from the tour to be on and stuff like that. And they were, you know, it is what it is. Unfortunately, it rained, and that's kind of what happens.
Well, you got some good interviews. And that's
well, I got one.
You got one.
One interview.
Just one.
Just one.
Yeah, Shayna Texter. It's all he got in before the skies opened up.
Before the storm started coming.
Well, I figured you would have drug some of them into her to your truck. That would have been a good, you know, interview session.
No, because the truck was pretty far away. And everybody said, oh, why don't you just jump under a tent and everything? And I was like, the track is banked 15 degrees towards the infield, and you want me to stand in the infield with, like, 4 inches of rain coming?
Yeah.
I was like, nah. You know what? My truck's higher than the track. I'll be all right there. And then the ride home was pretty hectic. You know, it was a bit of a nightmare, but it is what it is. But it was fun. I mean, I'm totally wearing my flat track shirt that I bought. I had a good time, anyways. You know,
well, that's good. You got something out of it at least.
Oh, right? And a special thanks to the guys at the CMA, Christian Motorcycle Association. You know, we don't really ever mention them that much, but they go to a lot of events like Sturgis, Rolling Thunder, and all these things. They always have the free waters. And it was so hot. One of the guys I was with, he's a bigger guy and stuff, and on some medication, and he was feeling a little lightheaded. So they were like, hey, sit down underneath, and gave him water and stuff like that.
They take good care of you.
You know, they take good care of you and stuff, and sometimes you need that. So shout out to those guys for giving a hand.
Okay.
I think I'm good with that.
Well, I saw, Warren, you posted online that you, last weekend, I guess you went to Paris?
Yes.
With your wife?
Yes.
I go there, like, all the time. I literally have to go through Paris to go home. I commute, you know, plane lands and fly Paris, then over to where I live.
Yeah, we decided to take a short weekend trip, and we got up on our big blue Harley and went to Paris.
Hey, did you go by Casa de Fil?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, see? I tell you, I live within driving distance of Paris. Yeah. Paris. I like to call it Paris.
Now, we went over, it's Paris, Virginia, if you haven't figured it out by now. And we hung a left at the intersection and actually drove through the town of Paris, which takes about
a blink,
45 seconds at a slow speed.
Did you see the Eiffel Tower?
No, but we rode on the right bank of the Seine.
That's cool.
And we saw one of the Parisians out there tending their gardens.
Did you get escargot for lunch?
No, there's no place to eat. And we saw the cat. You
there's
know.
No place to eat.
Paris, Virginia is like half a building.
There's a huge museum and everything there.
The Louvre?
Wrong Paris.
Yeah, the Louvre. Wrong Paris?
Wrong Paris.
Not much of a duplication then. They did a lousy job, apparently.
And it's smaller than Paris, Texas, too. So
okay, I haven't been to Paris, Texas either.
I think you probably fit all of Paris or Virginia into the parking lot of this.
Oh, facility. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just a post office.
You actually have been to Paris, Virginia.
I don't. If I have, I didn't even know it.
Have
we
you
drive
not gone
it?
With me to Ryan's house?
Yes, I have.
Well, Ryan lives in Paris.
Ryan lives in Paris?
That's Paris.
Wow. That's hard to imagine that Ryan lives in Paris.
Well, see, now.
Okay. You know, we're going to have to. Do you got a picture of Sasquatch you can throw up on the thing so people can see what Ryan looks like?
Yeah.
Well, now, Ken, now you know where Paris is. You can load up your wife one day and say, honey, I'm going to take you out to Paris. Take her out there and say.
She'd be able to see through that right away.
All right. Well, I'm also going to try to take my wife sometime this summer to Glasgow. London.
Okay. Are you doing all the European cities?
I'm gonna do the big cities of old Europe tour.
Ah.
And then I'm also gonna throw in Cairo, that's in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Athens, which is in Ohio.
There's a Damascus in Maryland.
And Damascus, but I'm kind of worried about that one with all the fighting and the civil war they're having. So, but we'll swing through Damascus.
Okay.
Yes, Syria, Damascus, Syria.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Anyway, I'm going to try to do some of that this summer.
It's probably safer in Syria than Maryland. That's all I was saying.
It probably is.
I was like, I'd probably go to the one in Syria before I went to the one just outside of Baltimore.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to hit a lot of these, the great cities of the old world and see what happens. You know, that way my wife can't say I've never taken her anywhere.
And yeah, she'll still complain anyways.
And this weekend, it was completely not motorcycle related, actually, but I went to the Air and Space Museum, the Udvar-Hazy Center in Dulles.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And I have yet to be to that.
I had never been there. And I used to work like right behind it. Literally, I could throw a stone and hit the side of the hangar there.
Did you?
No, I didn't, because I was afraid, you know, that I'd injure myself. But anyway, I went there, and if you haven't been, Phil, you should go.
I want to go. I've been to the one downtown D.C.
Yeah, very different.
And I love those kind of museums. I just haven't.
They have an SR-71 Blackbird inside there.
Nice.
They have the Enola Gay in there.
Space Shuttle.
They have the Enterprise Space Shuttle. I stood underneath it, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You can go around the back and get underneath it,
see
which
the
is
size
cool.
of the engines and everything.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive.
Now,
so.
I will tie this back into motorcycles because every year in the fall, like early to late September, they have the Rattle the Runway.
Yes, yeah.
And where they line up all the motorcycles behind it, and they let you go into the museum for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours before the ride starts. And you get really a nice time there. You get out there and do that, then you take out your ride. You go through Dulles Airport and then down to D.C. to the 9/11 Memorial at the Pentagon.
Yeah. And here's a secret, Phil.
I love secrets.
Go there after,
it's not a secret when you tell this many people.
Well, that's right. It's not gonna. I'm telling you.
Secret ruiner.
I'm telling you and a few people out there who, if you're actually listening to the show, you deserve to have something for free because God knows you're not willing to pay.
you're not willing to pay for anything.
Right. So
goodbye, three listeners.
Yes, right. If you go there after 4 o'clock, parking is free, and admission is always free. Yeah, it's $15 if you go there before $15. 4. But it's free, Phil, after 4, and they're up till 6:30, and 2.5 hours is enough to see everything. All right. Would you agree?
No, I would say...
Yeah, but I could go there like 3 days.
Yeah, if you do it over a couple days, yeah, because if you really take your time...
Well, if you're slow, because I saw everything in there in 2 hours.
I like to read some of the placards about what's going on with the individual airplanes and the different things about it.
And Ken also gets one of those little handicap things to ride around on.
I did not this week, though. I actually walked.
Oh, your foot's feeling better?
I did walk. My foot was feeling better.
Unless I see photographic evidence of it, you got to scoot.
I do have actually photographic evidence. You want photographic evidence?
Yes, we'll need that for next week's show.
Yeah, www.patreon.com/NTN.
Costs $22 an episode.
$22 to get the photographs. So anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and get right, instead of taking a break, we're going to get right into
doing the news. Little plug?
Sure.
All right, and I know we don't normally do this and stuff, but...
Wait a minute, give away something for free?
Give away something for free.
Yeah, we never do that.
But my hometown library announced last week, that's Riverhead, New York, my hometown library last week announced that they're going to be doing an antique motorcycle show at the library and stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you're on Long Island...
So what are they paying us to go up and emcee this thing?
Probably not.
Okay. Well, we're used to that.
Yeah, you know, they haven't even sent me a special VIP invitation yet.
Oh, great.
But if you're on Long Island, that should be kind of cool. The Sandbar chapter, which is the Antique Motorcycle Club chapter up there, is huge. It's one of the largest around and stuff, and they got some really cool bikes, including all three of the bikes that were on the stamps that were debuted in Sturgis in 2006. Are all members of that club. So I got to imagine there's a pretty good chance you'll get to see those. But I just figured I'd give it a plug. I mean, that's the first time there that I can ever recall there being an antique motorcycle club. I mean, an antique motorcycle show in my hometown.
So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Is Billy Joel going to be there?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, he's close. His museums. Right. It's like my town would be halfway from his Hamptons house to his museum.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good chance. There's a good chance. Other guys with classic bikes and big in the bike community that are Long Island's D. Snyder from Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
Mark Mendoza from Twisted Sister. So there's a.
Do they still live up there? Or they?
Yeah, no, they still all live up there and stuff. There's a good chance. You know, I mean, you're that close to the Hamptons, you'll probably see some celebrities or at least big money people too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, well, definitely big money people, right?
That's why none of us will be there.
Well, I might. Why not? Hometown.
When is it?
I don't remember the date. I screwed that up.
That's a great plug, Phil.
Yeah, sometime in the future.
Sometime in the future, there will be a...
I think it's in August, Antique Motor.
That narrows it down.
August the 15th
or 16th? Between August 1st and August 31st, there's going to be this antique museum.
August 8th.
There you go.
2015.
Thank God for Google, right?
Yep. And if you want more info, riverheadlibrary.org.
There you go.
Now, have you ever been in the library?
Yes.
Okay, just check.
I used to read a lot of books.
Yeah, they don't have pornography in libraries, Phil, just so you know.
Well, they do in the arts section.
They do? I get it.
Actually, the library has changed so much.
How much time did you spend reading National Geographic in there, Phil?
I did not read Black Man's Playboy. Send the hate mail to Warren at indianradio.com. Fill his box.
All right, anything else before I kick off the news?
No, go for it.
All right, right. So Les Potts, who is 65, had a dream that he wanted to attempt the toughest Iron Butt motorcycle challenge himself. And I know that
what are they
Warren's been talking about.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing one this summer. Just, you know, timing hasn't worked out yet. But
you were talking about doing the 1,000 miles in 24 hours, right?
Yeah, 1,024. Which one is this?
The tougher one is what they call a Super Iron Butt, where you're traveling through all contiguous 48 states in 10 days.
Yeah, that is pretty tough.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
They also had the four corners where you got to tag, you know, the northernmost, you know, like Key West, the tip of Maine, the tip of Washington, and there at the below San Diego, whatever that lowest point is.
Yeah, Tijuana.
Right before you get to the Tijuana.
Yeah.
So you got that one as well. I don't know which would be tougher, the Four Corners or the 48 states.
Oh, the 48 states would be tougher. 48 states. Absolutely would be tougher because you're traveling throughout. I mean, to touch the Four Corners, you could go in a box around the country. To do the 48 states, you got to do this kind of stuff. I know. Man. This works on camera. It doesn't work on podcast, but I'm making this little scribbling.
Ken's making, I almost did it to show people, yes. But that don't listen to work on podcast either.
But it works on the video. So if you go to the video, it's doing this.
And that's on YouTube.
And if you haven't gone to the video, yeah, and if you want to know what Ken was doing, you need to go to, yeah, you need to go to NTN America on YouTube. Search for NTN America or Doghouse NTN.
D-A-W-G.
D-A-W-G, you idiots. Okay, so where were we? So anyway,
wow.
So he wanted to do this. So his wife Sharon, she actually ended up being the voice of reason. Because you know, I tell you what.
How old is he again?
65.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, Warren. I know we can say that because it's not that far away. But she just told me that it didn't make any sense to go alone. He was going to do this alone. She's, now I'm glad I listened to her. Potts contacted two guys that he knew he would need. One was a guy, Steve Graves, who was 44, so he figured he'd survive the ride. So you pick a younger guy. And Randy Phipps, 51. The three had actually completed Iron Butt riding contest before doing the 1,000 miles that Warren's talking about in 24 hours. And they did that through South Dakota in 2013. But 48 states in 10 days is a whole hell of a lot more.
That's going to be pretty tough.
And they agreed immediately, although, Graves agreed immediately, and Phipps took a little bit more convincing to do this, because that's a pretty daunting ride. Yeah. If somebody came to me with that, I'd say, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm going to need a backup butt. You know, because my butt ain't iron enough to do that. That's a lot of time in saddle.
That's one of those things where it sounds good before you do it, and it sounds good after you've done it.
Yes.
But while you're doing it, it's probably a pain in the butt.
Yeah, and absolutely. And this is definitely, to me, 1,000 miles in 24 hours is a respectable challenge, but 10 days in the saddle is tough, period. You know, I mean, and that many miles you're talking about. You're talking about 5,700 miles, I think, I figured was the shortest you could do it in.
There are a couple of places you can Google them to find out what's the shortest route to go through every state.
Right.
And so I think you're right. It is about 5,700 miles. I saw it one time.
Right.
And it's...
That's just a lot of saddle time.
Yeah, but that's 5,700 miles. I'd say 6,000 miles in 10 days.
It's 6,500 miles.
6,500 miles.
It's the shortest?
It's the shortest I can find.
Yeah, so you're still talking about 650 miles a day for 10 days straight. That's a lot of saddle time.
That's a lot of saddle time.
10 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's in a motorcycle seat, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying. 10 hours a day.
Does he say when he's going to do it? Is it going to be in the summertime?
Well, they actually did it.
He ain't doing it in the winter.
They actually did it, and they completed it.
All right, good for them.
Yeah, they did it. They arrived home on June 10th.
So they started on June 1st.
His comment was, I certainly wouldn't do this for fun, okay? Which I could definitely see.
Wow.
But the good thing was, he said, by having the other two guys there with him, there was enough peer pressure that pushed him on.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want to be the guy, and I could see that, the guy that wanted to be the one that says, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, that's why in the Army, we always buddy up on all those type endurance tests, because you don't want to be the guy to quit. You'll be okay if your buddy quits, but you're not going to do it.
Now, is it 10 days, but you actually gained some time, because look how much time you gained going cross country.
Yeah, we found out about that driving home, didn't we? The guy that they were having a hard time getting to go on there, Graves, had not been away from his wife for more than 2 days since they got married.
So he needed the vacation.
So that's what I said.
The reason they had a hard time getting her to come along is because he was planning a trip to Russia.
I said the other two guys were doing him a favor. They left on June 1st, headed east out of Brandon, South Dakota. The first day, they recorded 897 miles. The next day, 1,007.
That's a pretty good ride.
Their total distance was 8,400 miles that they rode.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, they did actually step foot. You have to actually step foot in 48 contiguous states. You have to actually dismount.
Butt,
you have to dismount.
The iron butt with the 1,000, you have to document every all your miles. And that means you got to go when you fill up a gas. You got to get a printout that has the date time stamp and all that kind of stuff. So I imagine it's the same for this one as well. So these guys, that's why they came over. You know, 800 miles or 8,000 miles because they had to go find a gas station, print out receipts, and do all that stuff.
Well, plus they, you know, I think probably where you leave from will dictate what the total mileage is going to be as well. So probably it might not be able to, you might have to drive 150 miles out of your way to get to the shortest route, perhaps from where you are. So I mean, there's other things that come into play as well. Plus, I assume that they had to find places to stay. Or campgrounds that they could camp in, and things of that nature. So those things that's not the shortest route isn't necessarily the route that you'd want to take.
You gotta make sure you can find the nearest Krispy Kreme.
No, Phil won't eat there. Phil doesn't like Krispy Kreme. Disgusting. Isn't it hard to believe?
Well, he's from New York.
I know, he eats Dunkin' Donuts.
Damn right.
Nazi
hey, by food. The way, we're in a
alleged
tornado
Nazi.
Warning now.
We are in a warning?
We are in a tornado.
Oh, cool.
Warning.
So I just want everybody to know out there that we potentially are giving our lives for this show.
We are so dedicated to bringing you quality entertainment.
Right. If you're seeing this show right now, it means that we might have squeaked through, but we could have some serious injuries. You need to go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com.
Help pay our medical bills.
/NTN to help. Consider it a survivor's fund.
Ken, from what I understand, by the end of the storms tonight, you're going to have a torn ligament in your foot. And you're going to need some money to replace that. We'll do a GoFundMe.
I think so. I think we'll do that.
Or if you have a recently departed loved one, send
with a size 9.5 to 10 foot.
Yeah, we need a ligament.
Send her the ligament from the foot.
All right, we're going to wind out to a break right now. When we come back, I'll finish up the story, and I got one more that I think I'm going to do as well, too. So you don't want to miss that. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, folks, welcome back. I want to finish up the story I was doing on the Super Iron Butt. I think, Warren, I think you should do a Super Iron Butt.
I'll pass on that.
Did they say winter's coming? Oh, that's the Iron Throne.
That's the Iron Throne, not the
winter's
Iron Butt.
Winter's coming.
So, as I was saying, the three riders bounced through potholes on the Jersey Turnpike, which are actually...
Surprise!
They are quite impressive, I think. They stopped and they talked to a sheriff in Kentucky, which is a great way to get us put in the Kentucky Who's Cow.
Yeah.
The shortest time they were in any state was in Colorado. They just clipped a corner of Colorado. They did have some pretty impressive winds in Montana, and that is not fun on a motorcycle when you have a lot of crosswinds. They spent one night in Vegas, which was their only recreation for the whole time. And I won't even get into what they did for recreation. But I can say that they got a steak at a steakhouse. There is a couple of really good steakhouses. In Vegas, they
I'm just going to bite my tongue.
Yeah. There's some nice kitty cat clubs, too. They saw the Cirque du Soleil, and that was actually their break that they took for making the final stretch. The rest of the trip, they all say, was a real grind, and I can imagine that it would be
pretty soon. That's a ton of miles.
That's a ton of miles. And all three agreed that they were not prepared for the exhaustion.
I can believe that.
I don't quite know how you can take on a trip that's going to be 10 days through 48 contiguous states and not expect it's going to be an exhausting
endeavor.
I think
you expect it. I just think it's more than you expect.
Yeah, I was about to say the exact same thing. Because I can sit here and think about it and intellectually understand that, 1,000 miles a day, if you're lucky, 600, 500 miles on a bad day. So,
yeah,
it's going to be a lot of miles. But when you actually do it, that's something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's kind of hard to gauge exhaustion until you feel exhaustion, right?
Depending on the weather, tomorrow I may be riding my bike all the way down to Myrtle Beach. That's 8 hours.
Well, that was one of the things they didn't mention in here, but let me finish on there. Most nights they rode until midnight and were back in their seats at 5 a.m. Now, here's the thing that here's a comment I'm going to make, because I read this in the story. I had to read it a couple times because I couldn't believe it.
Okay.
Most days they wore the same clothes.
I can believe that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like you're taking a suitcase on your bike with you.
Yeah,
you're pretty much just changing your drawers.
They got big June 10th. So they went through some areas where probably it was pretty warm.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they were funkin'.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, it doesn't take much to take a few changes of clothes. Is it me? Is it
Depending on your hotel, some of them have a laundry service.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't have time for that. Phil, they got in at midnight and left by 5 a.m. I don't think there's a laundry service that could handle that.
That depends on the hotel and the tip you leave.
And how big the tip. Right. Okay, I think it's a way. I think you could manage to bring a few changes of clothes. That's just my thought.
Yeah. You didn't want to.
Maybe.
Does it say what kind of bikes they were riding?
Stinky ones, I think.
Ones with motors.
One of the comments made by all of them was that the road started to blend together.
Highway hypnosis is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. They said the stops weren't made at any canyons or mountaintops or scenic overlooks. They, you know, you had to just stick to getting the miles in. You had to get planned for that day. You have to do that.
That's what the Iron Butt's about. Is about the ride, not the. Views.
Yeah, Phipps said nobody who hears about it thinks it's a great idea. Nobody gets inspired to go do what we just did. It's just it's just
something you got to choose to do.
You got to sort of choose to do this, that you're trying to tick off something that very few people have done. I was actually surprised how few have actually done it. He points to it as kind of like the Great American Gas Station Tour. Because that's really what it was. Well, no, that's his name. He's giving it. It's kind of like the Great American Gas Station.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because you got to stop and get your receipts every place.
Yeah. Right. And they didn't stop to do any sightseeing, so it was pretty much just going from gas station to gas station, and also getting the proof that they were in each of the locations in there. He said, it's not an Iron Butt ride, that his butt was fine. He said it was an Iron Will ride. He said that was the problem.
I would have to say, depending on the bike, and we don't know what they were riding, you know, it probably wasn't a horrible physical ride, but it's a beat up. It probably hurts your shoulders and your legs.
Your lower back. But I mean, I can only speak for myself, and I can tell you that the hardest thing for me in long rides is actually my tailbone, and even with trying different seats and everything. You know, I can go a certain number of miles, and after that, it starts to get bad, and my butt will start to kill me, and then my lower back, and then I'm pretty much.
Well, I've been pretty lucky. The stock seats on my Harley is both the 2011 and now the 2014 mm-hmm. Altras have been just perfect. I have not had any problems.
What's the longest ride you've been on?
About 2,000 miles.
Nonstop.
No, it's over a period of time, kind of mm-hmm. like what they're doing.
Right.
Some buddies and I.
That's pretty good. I think it's individual rider by rider thing. I know with me, that's where my weakness.
Well, that's why
my weakness is my tailbone.
my weakness is there's so many places to stop and eat and enjoy.
I can fix that right now. I'll put a Dunkin' Donut on the back of my bike, and you got to follow it and chase it.
I would catch you. I'd beat you for only having one.
The Iron Butt Association actually calls the people that have completed this ride the world's toughest riders.
That's a tough ride.
Yeah. And even though that there's the Iron Butt Association has 60,000 riders who are members of the Iron Butt Association, the 48 and 10 challenge is something that not many people have done. In fact,
under 1,000?
There's less than 200.
Wow.
Yeah, have done that.
You got three on this one ride.
And not only that, there's very even fewer people that have done the 1,000 miles in a day and done this, and all three of those guys had done both of that. So the Phipps said that they really don't have anything to do with the Iron Butt Association. They've done these rides just because it was a personal challenge in there. You know, they said it's nice to get the recognition, being only one of 182 people since the 1980s to actually do it.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. And they do have to provide proof of visitation each state with a receipt, as you said in there.
Do speeding tickets count?
it probably would. It probably would. They were telling stories about traffic stops in different states, and they say that, you know, again, like we said, it all starts to blend together.
Yeah.
You know,
that would be what would worry me.
yeah,
is the highway hypnosis more than hurting my back.
Well, it's in certain places.
Captain Morgan's can take care of the pain.
And there's certain places. There's certain places where I know that I kind of think what the road is that runs all the way from east to west across South Dakota.
It's like 90.
It's like 90, I think it is. It's one of those roads in there where it looks the same for miles after miles.
Hundreds of miles.
Well, it's just not just 90, just many of those east to west.
There are a lot of them like that.
Plain state highways are like that.
Yeah.
So let me move on, because I do got another story I want to get in before we head into the racing segment. You know, I would not call myself specifically a Harley-Davidson fan. I think I've had my fan moments in the past, but having worked on them for years has changed that a little bit. I do respect what they've accomplished, you know, having avoided the dreaded, you know, Indian, we're dead, we're alive, we're dead, we're alive, we're dead five times. They've managed to stay in business, at least, you know, if you don't count the AMF days, pretty much nonstop since the early 1900s.
Okay.
But, you know, in recent years, the company spent so much focus on crapping on unions rather than broadening their appeal to a younger audience, which is kind of demonstrated by the complete failure on, you know, when they MV Agusta fiasco, where you go out and buy a company for $40 million and then give it away.
That Buell boat.
And absolutely, that was the next one I was going to mention in there, pulling the plug on Buell. And, you know, and much of that's been was fueled by, and here's the big news that I want to celebrate tonight. That was kind of fueled by ex-narrow-minded CEO Keith Wandell, who is now gone. Mm-hmm. From Harley-Davidson, which I think is a blessing, absolutely.
You didn't hear a lot of wailing of teeth and, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth when he left.
No, absolutely not. So those days are gone, and Harley has a new, more forward-thinking CEO, a gentleman by the name of Dan Levitich, who is at the helm now.
Who rides and just bought bikes for his kids.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he's stuck with dealing with some of the questionable decisions of his forerunner. Harley-Davidson's Livewire project, which we've spoken about a number of times, and Warren actually took a ride on, that was announced a year ago, and they demonstrated across the U.S. and in Europe, is now been formally announced that it is unlikely to hit the market for quite some time. Levitich said in an interview that it might not make it until 2020.
And that's not that surprising, to be honest with you.
Well, it's not that far away either.
No.
What are you talking about? It's 2015.
Yeah,
it's
2015. Is 5 years.
That's a long time when you got other companies out there that are already producing electric bikes successfully, and one that's about to come with a new
who's
one.
Who's that?
Well, let me go through the story.
I mean, I was just wondering. You're like, they're producing them successfully. Well, they're not selling them. Motus can build a motorcycle. They can't sell one.
No. Zero is actually profitably selling motorcycles, and a big competition of Harley-Davidson is about to start selling a electric motorcycle next year, which I think will be quite successful. The first announcement of Livewire questioned whether, you know, stodgy old, pardon the term, Warren, sorry about that, Harley fans would be able to embrace a bike that emits a low-pitched whine, which is actually...
Because usually that's reserved for the rider.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's actually quieter than a typical lawnmower rather than the traditional Harley rumble, so much so that a not-so-secret plan to install speakers to emulate the traditional potato-potato sound that Harley has trademarked.
I'm glad he didn't do that. I thought the wine was good enough.
Well, don't hold your breath, because it may be making a comeback.
It's still going to happen.
Well, I didn't have a problem with it.
The fake speaker.
Because they listen to Durka, who Durka says that BMW does that already. So, the new CEO is focused on engaging young adults, which is great, because I think that's what they need to do, and reduce reliance on aging baby boomers, because we're all going to die in a couple years.
Yeah.
The Livewire generated mostly positive reviews.
Because it had Scarlett Johansson riding it.
I think so. And
that didn't hurt.
And, you know.
It did me. I'll tell you what.
You know, and actually it got good reviews from some of the competitors. Scott Harden, who is the marketing chief of Zero Motorcycles, said, you know, he loves the way that it looks.
It's a bad looking bike.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah. It's a bad looking bike, and it's just a shame that it's going to be 4.5 years down the road. As a regular reader of Trade Rags, my first thought was, why hadn't Harley-Davidson been smart enough to buy Zero the same way that Polaris bought Brammo?
You know, it makes sense to me that they would buy a zero or something.
Especially
like that.
When this is a company that's proved that they're willing to go out and toss $40 million in the toilet with MV Agusta.
I was about to say the same thing. It's not like they haven't done it in the past.
Yeah, multiple times.
You know, well, hopefully the new leadership at Harley's a little smarter. And I honestly think Harley has an upcoming problem. I thought that's where this article was going.
It is.
The upcoming problem is that now the cruiser bikes... The market, I think, is as competitive as it's ever been to them.
With
Indian, with Victory, but even like the Star motorcycles and the Hondas and the BMWs, you know, and stuff like that. I think, and then the young guys aren't like, oh my God, I have to have a Harley, because they came up riding a Kawasaki or a Yamaha or a Honda sport bike, you know?
Here's kind of the big news, which kind of this is something I think Harley Davidson's got to really worry about. Is that, you know, even though Zero has been selling electric motorcycles now profitably for several years, that Harley's biggest rival, Polaris Industries, will actually launch one later this year. It's going to be this year.
Yep,
not really. 4.5 or 5 years down the road. Harley is betting its dominant U.S. market share in traditional motorcycles and the company's marketing clout means that it can afford to give others a head start, and that could be a bad bet.
Who knows? I mean, that is definitely a gamble.
It's a big gamble because Polaris has not got shallow pockets. They have deep pockets.
No. Yeah, Polaris, yeah.
The new CEO said Harley would await improvements in battery technology so that LiveWire can have the performance that buyers expect. Quote, we will get to that nirvana the customers say they want. He said, probably not. He said, we will get close enough, but I believe we will. The likely launch, he said, is not in the next couple years. But it's not going to be past 2020, so that tells me it's going to be 2020. Unless we run into some impossible barrier. Well, I mean, that's what I think.
The impossible barrier.
When you say it's not going to be past 2020, it means it's 2020. The big problem for Mr. Levitich is that by the time Harley starts delivering live wires to dealers, what will Victory's market share of the full-size electric bike market look like? They will dominate it.
I'm going to back off on the Polaris thing this a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing I've ever seen from the Polaris stuff so far has been just rebranded Brammo bikes. So the sport bikes.
Number one, the one that
they start producing cruisers or something similar to that in the electric.
But that's
format.
What they're going to do. That's what's coming out later this year. It's going to be a cruiser on a Polaris built Victory frame with an electric motor inside. They're going to transport. Obviously, it's going to have a lot of Brammo innards moved over to a Victory bike, but nonetheless. That's the market they're going to go after. They know that Harley Davidson's giving them a free shot.
They definitely are getting that.
So half the range of roughly 50 miles, which is all that Harley's been able to produce in there, which obviously depends on driving speed and conditions. But Mr. Levitich said potential buyers have indicated they want a range of at least 100 miles. That requirement might come down, he said, if employers start to provide charging stations. Unfortunately,
that's not going to happen.
No, I was going to say, unfortunately, his competition isn't waiting for something like that to happen. Cost is another problem. Gasoline-powered Harley sell in the range from roughly $7,000 for the smallest models to $40,000 for the company's fanciest bikes. Mr. Levitich said riders generally have indicated they would pay $20,000 for the LiveWire, but the company cannot profitably sell the bike at anywhere near that level given today's battery technology. But Polaris, maker of Victory and Indian Motorcycles, has said it expects to price its electric model in the $21,000 to $25,000 range, which Harley Davidson said is a daunting task.
That is.
It is.
That's going to be
tough. Why you buy somebody else's technology. So, anyways, Harley's hoping that you know, an electric motorcycle will appear to young urban adults who are concerned about pollution, but they're more concerned about what they pay for something. So if Harley's going to produce a bike that comes in at $40,000, and that's kind of like they're looking upwards of $40,000,
It'll
never happen. Anyways, we're going to roll out to a break. We come back, we're going to talk about World Superbike. And first thing we're going to do when we get back is we're going to have a British Superbike report, which is rarer than Diet Birch beer. That's right after this break. And then we're going to talk about racing in Misano. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Doghouse here on NTN Radio. We never really say that anymore. We're on YouTube, all that good stuff. You know, before we get into Olaf's British Superbike report about Schnetterton. We also have to mention on our website, ntnradio.com, on the Doghouse page, is a survey. Please go give that a do so we can learn a little bit about you guys for marketing purposes and stuff like that. And
there you go.
And stuff. I had to get that in because
yes, the service we are required.
Do that, and we didn't do that last week, so whatever. Right. Anyways, British Superbike was in Schnetterton, and I'm pretty sure I pronounced that wrong because when Olaf says it, it doesn't sound like anything like what it looks like. So here's Olaf's report. Roll it, Durka.
Hello, and welcome back to my piece on British Superbikes. We've been off for 7 weeks now, I think it is. Kind of a midterm break for the Superbike boys. What with the TT being on and Northwest and everything, they usually go to that. A few of the riders do. So straight into the action. Thanks for having me back, lads, anyway. And keep up the good work. Straight onto the action. This round was at Snetterden. Kind of the big news there was Agostini was there, and he was getting a corner named after himself, so nice for him. Don't know what his history is at Snetterden, but it's good for them to have someone like that there and showing up for them. So straight on to qualifying, and qualifying was dominated by Shane Byrne, who seems to have had a goose 7 weeks off and fully rested, and he got pole position by a second ahead of Honda racing teammates Dan Linfoot and Jason O'Halloran. So, cracking result for Shane Byrne. Full second ahead is dominant. So, on to the racing. And Shane Byrne, qualifying went well for him, and the racing went well for him. He dominated the race. I think after three laps, he was 3 seconds in front. He just motored ahead of everyone. So it was left to the rest of them to kind of fight for second and third. And it ended up being some good work by Josh Brooks. He qualified in fourth, so he had to push through. He did some good racing, and he ended up finishing second. Good job by him. He finished ahead of Honda Racing's Jason O'Halloran. So it was two Australians there in second place, second and third. Good job by the two of them. Good result for O'Halloran on the Honda. It's nice to see some young blood coming through with the challenge likes of Byrne and Chiari. Chiari, I don't know why I'm to him this weekend. Probably best not talking about him. He crashed in race two, and I think he finished about 20th in this race. I don't know what's up with him, you know. James Ellison, he was championship leader going into this race. He had a poor qualifying. He qualified in 10th, so he had tough work for him. I think he crashed out of this race, I'm not sure. Race one. Either way, he didn't do that well in race one. He crashed out one of the races, so. And so on to race two. Shane Byrne was pole position again. And race two was carbon copy of race one. Same result. Shane Byrne first, Josh Brooks second, and Jason O'Halloran third. Some good racing down the pack, but none of them were getting near Shane Byrne. It's kind of ominous to see, and it was a terrible weekend for James Ellison, who was leading the championship going in, and unfortunately he's down to third now in the championship, with Shane Byrne being first and Josh Brooks second. One note is Josh Brooks did look really good on the Yamaha. He had a lot of work to do in both races, so yeah, he actually had to pass people and, you know, be fast then. He didn't look as aggressive as he usually does, so in previous years he was quite calm, clean overtakes. There was nothing this year with Josh Brooks that's suggesting he'll be his usual wild man ways. So that's it, and I think I'm back next week or the week after. I'll have another report for you. That's it. Thank you very much for having me, and talk to you soon.
And we're back. Thank you, Olaf, for that British Superbike report.
Yeah, about time, Olaf. Thank you. He did say that he was going to give us another one
next year. No, we appreciate that he goes through that effort and stuff like that. And speaking of videos and reports, and that's Olaf's like first or second video report, right? First?
Second of this year.
Yeah, second of this year.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't mention it, but we did put up some videos from our pictures at Barber Motorsports, and also videos of some of the interviews we did. Ken got to sit down with Colin Edwards because he wouldn't let me sit down with him. And then
Ken was in his wheelchair.
I
was already sitting down.
So. He was already sitting down, and he screwed up one video earlier that week. But we got to talk with J.D. Beach.
How did I screw up a video?
Jake Gagne.
Just watch the J.D. Beach video, and you'll understand how he screwed it up.
And Roger Hayden. So there are some videos up on the YouTube page at NTN America, if you're on YouTube, that would get you to us. You know, we talked a little about the flat track. Other than that, there wasn't a ton of racing going on because Pro Motocross was off because Father's Day weekend, which they will be at Buds Creek, Maryland, local thing this weekend if you're in our home area. That's our local track. I might try and scoot over to that.
Oh, good for you.
I don't know. I got to look at my cash flow situation. I've been to a lot of races in the last couple weeks.
Right.
You know, so I might scoot over to that. This week coming up, Motor America will be at Miller. I just started getting all the press releases on that.
Which, expect rain since we won't be there.
Expect rain because we won't be there, and probably there will not be a not Paul Carruthers sighting.
Yes.
But who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But this past weekend, World Superbike ran in Misano,
mm-hmm.
home track to Ducati.
Mm-hmm.
And they had quite the... Well, I want to talk a little bit about... Before we get into World Superbike, I want to talk a little bit about the World Super Sport race. I don't know if you guys watched it. Did you guys watch it?
I did not
watch that one.
I really am beginning to hate you guys and thinking...
Well, I will watch it, but now you're probably going to ruin it for me, right?
I'm going to ruin it for you
just because... That's why I won't be watching it.
Just because, you know, PJ Jacobson did come in second. Kuzel won. So Soflakoglu, or however you want to say his name.
Soflakoglu.
Same difference. He had a miserable time. He dumped on like the last lap. Like midway through the lap, he dumped. So he got back on. He only managed to get to 11th. Two past doghouse guests were in the top 10. Martin Cardenas finished 10th. PJ Jacobson finished 2nd. So
very
I thought
good.
That was pretty good. Zanetti had a good race. Clozel obviously won. Gino Rea had a pretty good race. I guess some of his brother's speed's rubbing off on him now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't understand how Gino's running Honda while Johnny is running a...
Kawasaki. Well, Johnny was running a Honda last year.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't make any sense. But that was actually a really good race. There was a lot of good racing in it and stuff, and I enjoyed it. And it looks like the Honda is going to be a real good fit for PJ Jacobson.
Well, that's good because I think actually in this race, now that you already told me this, I might still go back and watch it because it's so much of the season that I have been watching. It's been a Kluzel versus Soflakoglu battle,
yeah.
And PJ Jacobson's been back and, there following behind there, but he couldn't quite crack into those two in there. So
he
would have
been there with it, even without the Soflakoglu was probably that guy. That Turkish guy was, we'll call him the Turkey. The Turkey was running like 4th at the time. So PJ Jacobson had already battled past him and stuff.
Wow.
You know, and it was more.
Is Soflakoglu still leading the series?
Yeah, he's still leading the points.
Mm-hmm.
But they did make up a bunch on him. They I think he went into the weekend leading by, 40, and now he's only leading by 20.
He's a tough character. This is not a one and done thing with him. He's done this before. So
yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying. But you know, because 11th, I think you get 5 points, and Kozel mm-hmm. winning got the 25. So he gave up 20 points on the lead. PJ Jacobson is now within 40 points of the lead. He's pretty locked into third, and he's only 20 points out of second.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. He's getting arm pump surgery. I believe this week he's coming back to New York. And he's getting some arm surgery and stuff. So I reached out to him a little bit, see if we can get him on the show. I imagine maybe after the surgery and stuff, we got a pretty good shot. Because they do not run at Laguna Seca, which sucks. We finally got an American in a series doing well. And then the World Supersport doesn't race in America. So World Supersport's next stop, I believe, is CPAN.
I don't understand Dorna's logic in that. They're trying to build... A bigger representation in the U.S., and then they don't have Super Sport run that's got an American in it, and a semi-American at Martin Cardenas. So.
Yeah, I kind of can treat him as an adopted American.
Right, yes.
You know, so Anyways, that's just where that was. It was a great race. If you get the chance to watch it, go watch it. Mm-hmm. It was. I enjoyed it. You know me, especially because PJ did well. You know, in America.
Yeah, no, I agree. I usually do watch it, and I just didn't this weekend. So.
And then we had the World Superbike races, mm-hmm. which kind of didn't go how I thought it was going to go.
A lot of history made in that race.
Mm-hmm. in that race. Ducati double podium put them over. What 800 there,
yes,
I think?
Yes, but still not a win. They needed
still
a,
not a win.
Still not a win. That was, they're going for their 200th win in World Superbike and didn't get there.
And then Kawasaki now has the record for 8 wins in a row there or something like that. I don't know. There was a whole bunch of...
The number of manufacturers? Not in a row. It can't be in a row.
Yeah.
No, it can't be in a row. Oh,
Yeah, because Rea and Sykes are both on Kawasaki's.
Right.
And I think the record was 7, and Sykes, they had 6
Sykes
wins.
Won... Sykes had won 5. He won 5 in a row, so Rea would made 6 in a row. Maybe that's the record.
Maybe 6. All right. Yeah. I don't know. They had so many records going on. It was kind of hard to
keep
track.
Well, what Sykes did was, and I figured I'm kind of screwed because I picked Sykes in...
You picked backwards.
I picked backwards, but I picked Sykes in race 2, and I was tempted to pick Sykes in both of them, but I saw how practice went, and he wasn't doing really well. In fact, he for the first time in a number of years now, he had to go out in Super Bowl 1. And, you know, no one's ever won the poll who's gone through Super Bowl I, and Tom Sykes goes and does that. First time ever in history it's been done. And not only that, he wins the first race, and no one's ever gone from Super Bowl I.
And
that's
won
like
the
another
race.
Another record that was set just going into the race. So
I mean, it was just it was a very historic weekend.
It could have been a double for Jonathan Rea if he didn't screw up on his tire choice for race 1.
Yeah, and he was fast even with the other
not fast enough.
Not fast enough. He was the only one who ran that tire too. I think
if you look at Tom Sykes' tire after race 1, Tom Sykes' tire was shredded.
Yeah,
in race 1, and I think in race 2. That tire came apart a lot sooner because he got to a point where he just started losing ground.
Well, in race 1, you know, he got out in front and pretty much stayed there. I thought race
and everybody
one
was chasing him, so it's kind of hard. It is hard to manage your tire wear when you've got to try and chase somebody down.
Right, and I got to admit, I thought the first race was a little bit boring. I got because they all fell into their finish order fairly early in the race.
Oh, there were
some back and forth, but
I mean I just want to say this, you know, Max Biaggi was exactly not impressive. Sorry, you know, what do you have? 2 6?
A fifth and a sixth,
actually. I mean, it's a respectable finish,
but it's
respectable finishes, but it doesn't, you know.
Just reminds me of this Bruce Springsteen song, Glory Days.
Yeah, exactly.
They've passed you by.
Right, and you know, in Biaggi's last year, Tom Sykes showed that he was very beatable. Tom Sykes lost the championship to Biaggi by half a point.
Yeah.
And so he showed he was very beatable. Tom Sykes continues to show that he is now comfortable on that bike. I think he did a poor job in race 2 of managing his tire, but...
Race 2 was a lot more competitive.
A lot more competitive. The problem was Giuliano was pressing him very early in that race, so he had to push really hard, and he ate his tire up.
What about the... Everybody going into the race was going, oh, this is going to be a battle between Kawasaki's and Aprilia. Mm-hmm. Kawasaki's and Aprilia, and then Ducati comes out of...
But it still was kind of a race between Kawasaki and Kawasaki. Aprilia did okay. I mean, you know, I think they did okay. Haslam, you know, competed
hard.
Haslam had
the one podium.
Yeah, he had the one podium. Yeah. And they were not, and Aprilia was not expecting a podium in this at all going in. I actually thought it was going to be a Ducati-Kawasaki race from the very beginning, which is more or less what happened.
What it ended up being, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, you know, other than that, you know, the series didn't need to have happen happened. Jonathan Rea got a second and a first.
Yeah.
He's now, what, 130 plus points ahead?
133.
133, and now we're in the second half of the season. It's going to be damn near impossible without him having some DNFs to anybody have a shot at it.
You know, right. They're at a point now where...
And it's not that far from being the second place is going to be sewn up by Kawasaki as well, the way it's going, because Sykes is doing better and he's in second place.
You know, until they said it on the broadcast, I guess I've mentally known this, but I never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Rea's worst finish this year is the second.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like...
He's only done that a couple times.
Yeah. Right. You know, right. It's like, oh, man.
But in race one, it looked like he was going to not get a podium. And they said that had been the first time
right.
that he had not gotten a podium. And it looked that way. And at the end of the race, he did have a little bit more tire than yeah. everybody else.
And he was catching guys, but yep. just not enough to get him where he needed to be.
Right. He lost too much in the early on in the race.
Yeah, so...
Yep.
So that's kind of where that all wrapped up.
So how
up.
Did that? What did they do with the pool?
You know, the pool. Funny you should mention it because mm-hmm. that's what I was getting ready to get into.
Yeah, we're getting
the pool.
Deep
there was a little bit of changing. Matt B, who was solidly in third spot, did a little bit of risk taking and went with Davies in race one and Haslam in race two, which was two podiums.
Yeah.
But that 32 points did not help out when just about everybody had Rea for the double
mm-hmm.
and the 45. So he went from third to fifth.
It's amazing. You know, that pool, in World Superbike, it's getting to the point that, you know, everybody's playing it safe and picking Rea for the double.
Yeah. What, well, not it, everybody, because Joshua, our first year, our inaugural pool champion,
mm-hmm.
he actually had Sykes Rea in the right order.
Yeah, because he just picked after me and picked the opposite.
And he picked the opposite. That's yeah. usually
I don't
a good
consider
thing.
Rea as the safe. He's a safe point.
Oh, no. He is a very.
He hasn't come in less than second.
That's a points pick.
That's what I'm getting at. Is he? No one has proved that he's not going to be knocked off.
Well, that's what makes him a safe pick.
That's why he's a safe pick.
He's a safe pick.
Now,
so any other pick's going to lose you points.
No, you would have made boy points by picking Sykes in race one and Rea in race two.
Right. Joshua's the only person who made points up mm-hmm. on Olaf, our leader.
Right.
So the pool goes Olaf in first, Hawkeye second, Richard third, me fourth, Matt B fifth. Down in the area of 12th through 14th, mm-hmm. we have Carl C at 460 points, Ken at 458, and snuck in the middle
mm-hmm.
is Warren at 459. So Warren did pull ahead of you this week.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to do something about that because that's pretty embarrassing.
The Harley pulled in front of whatever you got there.
The Polaris.
The Polaris. So that's kind of how it is. Everybody does have like defaults in, but you know, like I said, only one person.
Oh, does Javier have defaults in
yes,
now?
Yes, he sent them in to me last week.
Did he use his defaults this weekend?
Yes, he actually did. Okay. So we're glad that happened. It's good that people aren't going to be losing points like they were. But a lot of tight races is still, first to last is under 200, is 200 points. So, you know, it's pretty tight. It's pretty tight.
Yeah, there's a lot of points left in the season.
A lot of points left in the pool. A lot of tight battles. Between fifth and seventh, there's only 10 points or so.
That's nothing.
You know, so that's nothing. It's still early. I mean, we all remember Ken started out the pool almost 700 points behind.
I think it was 9,000.
And you're within 150 now. So
very good.
You know, 140. Yeah, within 140.
Within striking distance.
Yeah, within, yeah, right.
You know. So yeah, I can hear the thunder. Do you hear the thunder?
I do hear it. Yeah. I think you know it's I would imagine if you asked Olaf, he would rather be in the position he's in now in about 8 weeks than where he is today.
Yeah, you know, here's an interesting thing that I just pulled up as like little pool things. Hawkeye, believe it or not, has the most podiums at 27 podiums so far.
I've That's never seen impressive. Him on the podium.
No, I mean the podium.
Oh,
picks.
In the pool.
In the pool. Jeez.
But you don't know. He might have a TRR or something at the house.
But, yeah, he could.
But he's got a slew of Ducatis. But Rico, who is eighth place in the pool, leads us with the amount of wins at 16 wins.
Wow, it shows you it's a points pool.
It's a points pool. You know, Rico seems to be wreckers of checkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's got the most wins. So I just thought that was kind of a little bit of an interesting stat. And I actually have the most perfect weekends with five times.
So
I've
having
got
perfect
double.
Weekends
That's
is still not enough.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Is that what she
don't
said?
Matter.
Doesn't matter. It's consistency.
It's consistency. Yeah. So that's kind of where we've been. And other than that, we got MotoGP's going to be at Assen, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, MotoGP
will be in Assen, and I can let everybody know in the pool right now, I will not be picking Jorge Lorenzo.
And Ken will not be picking Jorge Lorenzo, so that's right. Probably a safe pick for everybody out there.
And I'll tell you one more
Moto
thing.
America will be at Miller
and
here
I won't
in the area.
I won't be taking Mark Marquez either.
Yeah, I was going to you're going to be running out of people. Pretty soon, you're going to be picking like Nicky Hayden.
It's going to... Wow.
Wow, you're running out of people.
That's scary.
So once they make Ken's list, they just don't ever come off.
They don't. No. You know, he can't pick. Well, you can pick Pedrosa, but.
Yes, I could.
Pedrosa's
why not throw
too far
away a pick? Go ahead and throw a pick away.
Throw a pick away. So I guess that's going to wrap it up for this week, right, folks?
Yeah, I think so. We covered everything.
We will catch you guys all next week.